The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
If you are looking for life and career enhancements, you need experts that have been there, done that, tried, sometimes failed, and ultimately succeeded. Welcome to The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. You may be looking for help with relationships, health and wellness, home life, career, finance, or faith. We hopefully have the answers you are seeking. Now, here is your host, Scott Ventrella.
Welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us today. We're going to talk about women in leadership. And guys, before you tune out, you need to listen in, because there's something we can all learn from this segment. When I started my career back, I just can't believe I'm saying these this date, but or this year, I started my career in 1984. Guess how many women CEOs there were in the Fortune 500? Anybody want to posit a guess there? Yeah, zero. Okay, fast forward, 1995. So I started in 84. And you know, back then I was in a consulting firm. We'd get into companies, you'd look around, and it was the good old boys club, more or less, around the, you know, assembled around the executive leadership table or the board. And fast forward to 1995. Now I'm 11 years into my career. I go into the same boardrooms, the same executive leadership meetings. Guess how many women CEOs in the Fortune 500 there were back then? Well, if you guess zero, you're absolutely right. So there was zero. Okay, fast forward 2014. This is according to the Wall Street Journal research conducted just last year. Latest figures. There's actually some very good news here that women have made great strides breaking into the executive ranks. As of 2014, there are now 23. We've gone from zero in 1995 to 23 in 2014 women CEOs in the Fortune 500. I think that's making excellent progress, and I think that the increasingly diversity in both the the C-suite and on our boards is extremely important. Today, I'm very pleased to introduce. We actually have co-guests, which I love, and they're also both owners and of a consulting firm, LeadStar. And co-authors, I should say, in addition, Leading from the Front, No Excuse Leadership Tactics for Women. And let me do a short bio, and then, of course, we'll learn more about Angie and Courtney. Angie Morgan and Courtney Lynch are co-founders of LeadStar, as I mentioned, a consulting firm focused on the leadership development of women in prominent corporations, law firms, nonprofits, colleges, and universities. Now, this is where I think things get very interesting. Angie and Courtney met during a training exercise at Quantico, and both would rise to the rank of captain before leaving the service. With 18 years of combined military experience, these officers went on to lead troops and missions across three continents. Angie, Courtney, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much. Thanks. We're excited to be here.
Good to have you. And first of all, I want to say thank you so very much for serving our country.
Thank you, Scott. We appreciate that. It was an honor to be United States Marines. I think Angie and I would go back and do it in a heartbeat if we were just 20 years younger.
Yeah, if I was maybe 30 years younger and had a little bit more muscle on my body, I'd love to do that as well.
I'd like to get some of the muscle back, too. Thanks for reminding me on that one.
I know.
Thank people for my service, though, because I spent a majority of my time in Hawaii, and it was amazing. So thank you for allowing me to serve my country in Hawaii.
Okay.
And elsewhere, certainly, too. But it was
yeah,
great.
And I'm sure no matter where you are, the Marines are the Marines, so this was no cakewalk, I'm sure.
Yeah, Hawaii is just a staging area. It's a nice staging area, but it's a forward-deployed position.
So I've got to ask you, a while back I had a young lady who on the show that Leilani Munter is her name, and she started out as a biology major, and then long story short, and much to her initially her parents' chagrin, she went on to become one of the few female NASCAR drivers. And she runs the circuit right now. Now, everybody knows of Danica Patrick, but Leilani Munter is one of the few. And so I guess I'm mentioning that because where I'd like to start with both of you is, okay, how did you get to, you know, did you grow up thinking, okay, gee, I'd love to throw on those army fatigues and, you know, get all muddy and dirty and possibly go to war? I mean, how did that all happen?
Well, Andy, if you want to start first, I'll share my journey as well. But looking forward to hearing your story.
Really, growing up, I had military service nowhere on my radar. It wasn't until right before I became a freshman at the University of Michigan, and there's a story there. It's in the book, our book that we co-authored. But to summarize it, it was my dad. He presented the opportunity to try out ROTC while I was in college, and I didn't know what to expect. So I actually started off in the Navy ROTC program, not knowing that it was naval, meaning Navy and Marine Corps. I didn't even realize that the Marine Corps was a department of the Navy. I had no idea. But then I get to ROTC, and it was really more exploratory than full commit. I met future Marines, and they just had something I didn't have. They had a lot of confidence. They were very focused on what they wanted to do with their lives. And they had this tremendous spirit and teamwork about them that it intrigued me. It excited me. And, of course, my officer that I was working for totally encouraged me to really give it a shot. And that's when I made my commitment to the Marine Corps. It was during college.
All right. Now, were either of your parents, were you a military brat? Was there influence that respect?
I wouldn't say I was a military brat, but my dad did serve for 4 years in the Marine Corps during the Vietnam War. So I knew, I knew what the Marine Corps meant to him. And it was a lifelong commitment. And to say that I wasn't influenced by that would be wrong. So I certainly was biased towards the Marine Corps. But to be truthful, I think a lot of people would agree to this. I was also a little scared of the Marine Corps. It's an intense organization. And so the first thing that I was thinking of when I was dabbling in military.
Okay, Courtney, your story. How did you get there? And how did you two get together?
So basically, Scott, what happened is the judge said 6 months or serve your country. and I chose the service option, right?
I'll take the six months.
I don't know what I was thinking, right?
It's
interesting. It was purely volunteer. It wasn't that. I mean, even though in the 1970s here in the United States, we really did have conscription. But it wasn't that.
I had to register. I remember, sure.
Yeah. So it was just different ways of getting people involved in the armed forces. But though for me, I think I was about as far away from the Marine Corps in my younger years as anyone could be. I mean, I was in a sorority in college. You know, I used to look at kids that were in ROTC, and I would think, oh, that's crazy. They have to wear a uniform, and I had my ripped jean shorts on and my ponytail hanging out of the baseball cap. You know, I was really far away from it. But in my heart, I don't think I was, because I always loved challenge. I always loved adventure. And I had grown up in the Washington, D.C. area, and while none of my parents or direct family members had been involved in the military, I certainly was around it. My friends' fathers served on active duty, one in the Marine Corps, one in the Navy, and they had a strong influence over me. And, I got out of college. I had been working in journalism. But I just knew I needed something more. I needed to grow up a bit. I wanted more of kind of a gut-wrenching experience. And also, I wanted to go to law school. And candidly, I couldn't afford it. My parents had paid generously for my undergrad, but I had four other siblings that they were putting through college. And if I wanted to go to grad school, I was on my own. And so just the opportunity, it was so unique to have educational benefits, but to just really see what I was made of and see if I could make the cut. And so I think that challenge just really appealed to me. And that's what found me with no military background, square at officer candidate school, learning how to be a Marine. And it was an amazing, amazing experience. And candidly, everything my recruiter told me ended up being true. It was the challenge, the adventure, and the opportunity to see the world. And I'm appreciative of taxpayers that funded my legal education, too. So it was such an amazing experience.
When you say that, it makes me think of a movie that goes back, Stripes, with Bill Murray, of course, John Candy, where they sign up because they think it's going to be all adventure and thrill. Yeah. And when things get really rough, they say, wait a minute, what about all the adventure and the fun and the excitement? What happened?
Where's my travelogue, right?
Exactly right. So you, Courtney, you have, I think, three or four siblings, did you say? Is it four siblings?
Yes, I have four siblings. I'm one of five.
Do you have brothers?
I do. I have two brothers, two younger brothers, and then two sisters.
Okay. Now, so I'm only asking because I'm wondering, you know, as you described a little bit about yourself, were you a tomboy growing up?
I was. You know, I'm older than both of my brothers, and I like to say I was my dad's only son for 8 years. I mean, athletic. But then, you know, like I was also on homecoming court, and I was a cheerleader, right? So I think that that's the unique opportunity women in my era had. We could really follow our passions, and I love sports, but I had a girly side, too.
Yeah, you weren't pigeonholed. Now, how did you two meet?
I think being girls had a lot to do with it, right? Being women,
right.
So few.
You look around, there's not many women, right, at that
so
time?
So few women in the Marine Corps. So few women. Out of 180,000, only about 1,000 are female Marine Corps officers. And so Angie and I were all in camouflage, actually, when we met. So it took us a while to realize that there was another woman sitting next to us. But Angie, I'll allow you to pick up the story. Go for it.
Oh, yeah. Well, we were both, you know, I won't offer an excuse for why we were on the failure bus, but we were struggling both with learning land navigation, you know, one of those basic skills that as a Marine Corps officer, you need to have before they'll let you go into the fleet Marine Force.
Yeah, we had challenges with the fitness. We had challenges with the compass. So it's like a lot of people would think, oh, women, maybe they had issues with running and working out. No, it wasn't that. It was actually using a little tiny compass seemed to be an issue for Angie and I.
Yeah, but, you know, more of an issue if a guy can't handle a compass because, you know, they're not going to stop and ask for directions.
Yeah, exactly.
And I will say we were not the only people on that bus. We may have been the only two women, but we were not the only people on this failure bus. You know, it's one of those natural skills. Most people don't grow up learning how to use a map and a compass, but the Marine Corps teaches you, and God love them. They aren't going to let you pass unless you know these skills. So we were sitting together on a bus. We looked around, you know, looked at each other, and it was a really pleasant surprise. And to see Courtney, who always has a smile on her face, it was often, you know, it was very comforting for me during that time. So we really bonded over this struggle. And then after our six-month infantry school experience got done, we both were assigned to the same job. We were both public affairs officers. And we both, too, were stationed in the Pacific. Courtney was in Okinawa, and I was in Hawaii. And you wouldn't think of those two places being close, but since we were both in the same region, our jobs overlapped. She would come to Hawaii. We, you know, reconnect in other places of the world. And it was just a natural friendship formed and continued post-service, obviously, because we're on this call today.
Now, how were you treated by your male counterparts? It could be pretty rough for
depends.
Some women,
I love that question because it totally depended. I mean, here's the one thing that I would say was common. I mean, the Marine Corps is about meeting standards. If you don't meet the standard, whether you're a guy, girl, orange, blue, black, green, yellow, it does not matter, red, pink, purple, people are going to have issue with you. I mean, it's a very high-performing organization. And so I found that I probably had to prove my ability to meet the standards far more often than my male counterparts. But once I showed that, just like the officer next to me, I was able to meet the standards, I think that people were very receptive. And I think in many ways, being a very extreme minority in an organization had its advantages, too. I looked at things differently. I had that diversity of perspective. And once I earned trust and credibility with others, people often came to me and asked for my opinion because by osmosis, they think they were seeking that different way of looking at things, right? I truly believe diversity and diverse teams make people more effective. And the Marine Corps is all about sometimes we're not the most well-funded or we're not the biggest force out there, but we try to have the most ingenuity. And I think people really value diversity of thought. So I found most of my treatment pretty positive. Now, was there that one person, you know, my grandfather was in the Corps, my father was in the Corps, my son's going to be in the Corps, but my daughter never will be? That's a direct quote. I can recite it. It was told to me. But, you know, in those circumstances, I worked to try to change hearts and minds through strong performance.
Do you think that the bar was set a little bit higher for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's something I think all minorities, you know, in organizations. This isn't just women in the Marine Corps. This is really for everybody. My advice to anyone, if you feel like you're a minority, how to earn respect is to understand where the bar is set and exceed it. And that was my focus on the Marine Corps. You know, with the Marine Corps, the standards were, you know, that really physical organization. So I always thought, what's the bar here? Run and do pull-ups. How fast and how many? Okay, I'm going to go up and over, up beyond that. And I think that was my way in the Marine Corps of earning respect. And then I transitioned to a sales career. Same thing. It was a lot of men. Again, I found myself in a minority, and I thought, what's the expectation here? Sell a lot of stuff. Okay, I'm going to work hard to exceed that standard. And I think at the end of the day, it's just your consistency, as Courtney said, consistent commitment to performance. It's going to win out.
But you know, Scott, one area where there was a double standard, and I think this is worth noting, is around failure, right? So if I were to fail, I really felt as if the weight of the entire minority class was on my shoulder, meaning if, let's say, I had a bad run and I would have fallen out, I would have known that the word would have been, hey, you know what? All women, they just can't hang here. Versus if my colleague John Smith had a bad day out there, didn't finish the run well, it would have been like, oh man, what's up with Smith? He had a bad day. And it would have been more individual, his failure. So I feel like that was the one area where I felt the weight of the minority class, and I didn't want to let down my minority class of women.
So it sounds like, you know, you simply made a decision that you're not going to put on the victim mantle. You're just going to plow through that. Now, we have a couple of minutes before our break, but just to kind of tee up as we segue into from your military experience into the corporate world. At the beginning of the show, you might have heard some of the stats that, you know, in 1995, zero women CEOs in the Fortune 500s. Today, there are 23, or as of 2014, according to the Wall Street Journal report. What is going on? And just kind of a, and then we'll get more back into this right after the break. But why is this? What's happening?
I really think that, you know, as generations pass through the workforce, I think a lot of professionals, specifically women, I think they're starting to, you know, dream at an earlier age about the opportunities available to them. You know, I think about my dad. He never, ever told me, you know, women don't do this, women don't do that. And I think, Courtney, your dad was the same way, but that's not the case for all of my female contemporaries. I think as more and more men work with more and more women, ideas and around women leaders are evolving, and it's really exciting.
Yes, I think people are seeing role models, and there's a pipeline coming up. You know, I think we still need to do a lot more work to encourage women and develop the pipeline. And I've got a lot of thoughts on that, too, because I think some of the challenges around developing women leaders are also the keys to retaining millennials in the workforce. And so I see a lot of parallels where things might have been gender issues in the 70s or 80s. They're actually just quality of life issues that men and women in our younger generations are seeking to.
I agree, and I also agree that, you know, you're helping to break these barriers, just as we broke with Jackie Robinson as an example. You know, the color barrier in baseball. We see that with people with disabilities, and so on and so forth. When we come back, we'd love to get your thoughts on some of the. And again, guys, you got to stay tuned for this segment, because we're going to learn about the 10 leadership principles from both Angie and Courtney. We're here speaking with Angie Morgan and Courtney Lynch. They are co-authors of Leading from the Front: No Excuse Leadership Tactics for Women. And we're going to continue right after these messages.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com. If you are interested in real estate in America's largest city or anywhere, be sure to listen for Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco. Although our focus is on Manhattan and other real estate markets in and around New York City, we'll have plenty of information that will help you successfully buy, sell, and close a transaction, no matter where you are in the world. Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. in New York, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The world we live in has become a crazy place. Poverty is at an all-time high in the wealthiest nation on earth. We keep calling on government to save us with new programs. And now, we have more people using food stamps than any time in our history. This problem continues to get worse. The answer to poverty is in our homes, churches, and communities, and through our children. Get the answers from The Mickey Ellison Show, Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
the Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. To reach the show today, call in to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to scott@thebusinessofliving.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back, and we are here speaking with both Angie Morgan and Courtney Lynch. They are co-authors of Leading from the Front, No Excuse Leadership Tactics for Women. And what we're going to talk about now are some of the leadership lessons. And Angie and Courtney, I'm sure these are things that maybe started in the Corps. I think a lot of people, when they think, including myself, at first pass, we think of the Marine Corps as being more physical and, you know, having that the physical toughness. But my guess, and having read through your book, is that, you know, that mental toughness is also extremely important and also something that is part of the discipline.
You're absolutely spot on, and in fact, I think a lot of the physical toughness is designed to develop the mental toughness, right? When you're exhausted, when you're scared, when you're nervous, all of that, you start to build the tenacity and the resolve needed to lead effectively. But it's interesting, all of our leadership philosophy and principles are really based on a behavior-based leadership. It's not what the Corps called it, but we've come to realize that's exactly what it was that they were teaching us. They weren't teaching us to lead with status or title or authority or power or prestige motivating others. Instead, it was about our behavior. Were we able to act in ways that would allow us to influence outcomes and inspire others? And today at LeadStar, that's our definition of a leader, someone who's effective at influencing and inspiring. And that's where our book was framed, the practical behavior-based principles around being able to do that.
So we'll just dive headfirst, no particular order, into some of the leadership principles that you espouse. Whoever wants to jump in, please.
Great.
Angie, go ahead. You want to kick us off?
Oh. I think you're going to say which one you wanted to jump with first.
Okay, my favorite one. They're all great. Yeah.
Oh, funny. I thought one was going to get teed up. But no, if I could just dive in here, I'll start with the 10th chapter. I'll start from the back and we'll work our way from there. I'm going to start with authenticity. I think that's probably one of the greatest surprises coming out of the Marine Corps, because Courtney and I often get the question, so how did the Marine Corps fundamentally change you? And I don't think either of us were fundamentally transformed as a result of becoming and earning the title Marine. In many ways, it allowed us to draw a greater awareness to our strengths as a leader, and they certainly called out our weaknesses too. I mean, you always knew where you stood during Marine Corps training and even while serving in the Marine Corps. So the thing that's surprising, again, is authenticity. What do leaders need to be? They need to be really self-aware, and they need to not change who they are to be effective at influencing outcomes and inspiring others. And it's a tough one, authenticity, because there's oftentimes we go into organizations and we, especially as minorities, we ask ourselves, what do I need to do here to fit in? And that's not really the question. The question really is, what do I need to do here that allow me to capitalize on my strengths as a leader? So not fundamentally change, just really embrace your talents.
I would imagine, and this is just, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I think to be authentic, and by the way, I think this is not necessarily gender specific. I think male or female, authenticity is incredibly important. A word that I'm hearing a lot, and I it's not the same thing, but I think it ties in, is this whole idea of humility, you know, to kind of check the ego. And I think to be authentic, mm-hmm. you have to, like you said, be acutely aware of your strengths and also aware of those areas that, let's say, you know, developmental areas, let's say. But I would imagine, you know, humility for women, can that be misconstrued in the tough, you know, corporate environment where, you know, now you're opening up the door for guys just to kind of walk all over you?
No, you know, I don't think so, because I think what it is you have to think about leadership behaviors in the context of a full spectrum of them, right? Authenticity, leading as you are, it's a credibility factor. If we try to lead through a facade, eventually, one, it just takes too much energy to keep up that facade, but eventually, two, we'll lose credibility. But it's also authenticity combined with accountability, and I think that's where we really learn to try to anticipate and recognize blind spots and then personally demonstrate accountability. Our instincts to place blame are so powerful when things go wrong. And so we have to have that cognitive discipline to override our instincts, not place blame, and instead think about, okay, where did my performance falter? What could I do better next time? How can I be an efficient part of the solution? We can't control other people. We can only work to influence them, right? And sometimes by looking at what we can control, our own actions or our own responses to the actions or inactions of others, that's how we build the credibility to help influence positive change that needs to happen. And so women who are feminine or authentic, maybe they're kind or quiet or compassionate. I'm using some of these descriptors that are usually seen as much more kind of soft and subtle. That's great. And the key is you can be all of those things, but it's also combined with being able to set that example of meeting and exceeding standards, being clear with your intent and communication and expectations of others. And then when those standards aren't met, being able to have the courage to bring accountability into the conversation in ways that certainly protect people's dignity and grace, but to be able to say, hey, you know what? You didn't meet that standard, and let's address it. How are we going to get you to a point where you're going to be adding value to this team or this group or this project? So I think it's a real balance, you know, being authentic, but then also having the courage to have personal accountability and to hold others accountable as well.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because, again, in my work, I'd say I've got about a 50-50 male-female mix in my executive leadership coaching work. And, you know, some women that I've worked with will say, well, Scott, you know, I in order for me to earn a seat at the table, I need to be tougher. I need to kind of hide my emotions. I need to, you know, be more like one of the guys, right? And I would imagine, again, going back to your Marine Corps experience, you know, my guess is you weren't trying to mimic, you know, the guys, right? I mean, how would you rise?
I love it that you bring that up, because actually that was what was so fascinating about the Marine Corps leadership style, because they taught us to really embrace our own unique strengths. And I mean, I even had senior officers that mentored me say, you know, can you imagine if you went out there and, you know, if you'd watched, you know, the latest Clint Eastwood movie and saw that as your model, you know, and tried to lower your voice and puff out your chest and try to be like a guy, I mean, you would, again, lose all credibility before someone saw your capability. So when we feel that comes from an insecurity that we have to try to be like something we're not, instead of having confidence that we have something to value, to deliver a value, even if we're not like everybody else that's involved in our organization or that team we're working on.
So along those lines, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to add to that, too. It's interesting, when we chose to write Leading from the Front, what we did was we took Marine Corps leadership practices. I mean, the Marine Corps has rules and processes, you know, in spades, but we focused on Marine Corps leadership practices and brought them with a private sector professional spin on them. But we wanted to make sure with our audience that we let them know that it's not just one or two of the practices that round you out as a leader. It's actually the combination of all these 10 practices that make you influential. So there's accountability, and Cordy talked about credibility and about authenticity. And, you know, you were talking about humility too, and I kind of connect that to what we call emotional resolve, and it's often also referred to as emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. There's a presence there. There's a piece there too. I mean, the message that we want to share with professionals is, please, don't be a robot. Be human. Have emotions. Harness your emotions. And oftentimes, too, be the be the emotion that's needed in the situation, whether it's compassion, because it's a really great quality that leaders, you know, can demonstrate. Humility, absolutely. But harness those they can be inspiring versus alienating.
This is Angie speaking, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm, folks, as you know, Angie and Courtney are not here in the studio with me. So, but I think I've got the voices down. Angie, just kind of building off that, chapter 8, don't cry over something that won't cry over you. Now, when I was growing up, you know, my dad served in World War II, and, he, tough guy. And we were, you know, I'm one of seven, by the way. I've got three brothers, so four boys. And, you know, big guys don't cry, and you don't show emotion. And if it is, it's usually anger. I'm not saying that it's right. I'm just saying that that's how I and many others, I think, that might be able to relate to that. Now, again, in the world of business, I've seen situations where, you know, senior women, they might, show emotion or actually tear up or cry. And, you know, I'm not sure how that comes across. And I've heard, you know, when something like that has happened, oftentimes I think it's held against women. And of course, guys, you know, many of us were taught, you know, not to show that kind of emotion. What's your view on that? Would love to hear.
I love it that you get this question. I can't help but offer some thoughts because it's interesting. Like it is, like Angie said, it's harnessing your emotions, right? Harnessing your emotions for success. And when we put that chapter in our book, Don't Cry Over Something That Won't Cry Over You, it was about valuing our most heightened emotions. And candidly, I don't think tears in the workplace are appropriate. I think that extreme emotions need to be harnessed. In times where those extreme emotions are coming to the surface, people are usually looking for you as a leader to bring some calm to the chaos. And so I think that we have to process. I mean, our tears, our extreme anger, I mean, emotions are not bad or wrong. Those are very heightened, valuable, sensitive emotions. But we need to be cautious on how we share those and how we display those from a credibility factor. Angie, your thoughts?
Oh, no, just to add to them. You know, we often get a lot of feedback on this chapter, some positive, some negative, some people, you know, emailing us or sharing with us, you know what, I don't think you're right. I think if I cry, blah, blah, blah. And then we get some other people who say, you know what, you shouldn't be putting this message out there. You're asking people to be inconsistent. But, you know, we're not here to defend, you know, the rule, like tears if you show them. We're just really here to share. Like, there's an implication to everything. What do people, leaders, want during times of crisis? They want their leaders to be calm. They want them to be present. They want to communicate that they have the situation under control. And that is so much easier said than done, right? Because we're human. We do have emotions, which is why we have another chapter in our book talking about ways to think before you act, especially before you overreact. Because we want to communicate with leaders, both men and women. Because again, tears or extreme emotions is not necessarily a woman thing. It's a human thing. You just have to know if you're going to be influential and inspirational, you just have to be very aware of your command presence.
So when using emotion, again, a guy shows assertiveness and aggressiveness, and that's viewed, and I'm generalizing, but traditionally it's viewed as a positive thing. A woman does that, and all of a sudden, you know, she's overly aggressive, and she's got to be, you know, let's have a chat with her because, you know, we have to tamp that down a little bit. Double standard?
Yeah, I think that's a double standard,
sure.
Right? But
Absolutely.
I think the key is the multidimensional leadership factor, right? You can be tough, you can be aggressive, but let's bring service into this, right? I mean, that was what was the heart and soul of the Marine Corps leadership philosophy, and it's so valuable today in the private sector, service-based leadership. Are you doing everything you can to understand and meet the needs of the people around you, right? Because just being tough, being aggressive, and being self-focused, there you go. That's arrogance and aggression that in a man or a woman should probably be coached and mentored. But if you're tough and aggressive and you hold people accountable to standards, but when they have needs, right, they have a death in the family and they need someone to support them during that tough family time, they have a challenge with a development area and they need someone to come alongside them and offer them that support as they develop and to show them that they can do what's necessary to succeed, right? I mean, that's that service-based leadership, really seeking to meet people's needs, helping to build their esteem, helping to coach and mentor their confidence and development, and then showing up for them strongly during their times that might be tough or some of those critical moments of their life.
I've actually, I attended a conference where it was really eye-opening about, again, this was involving women in leadership, and the comment was made that, you know, women, again, generalizing, have kind of that, that 360 vision, you know, because they're aware of their surroundings, they're aware, you know, they're watching. So you go into the home now, they know exactly where the kids are doing, what they're up to, there might be things on the stove, and so they can multitask, I think, a little bit. They call it peripheral vision is what was the word I was looking for. But what I'd love to get your thoughts on this. We got a couple of minutes before our next break, but and that this is a whole nother show. But let's just kind of get some initial top of head thoughts. I think one of the one bit of research that I came across shows that one of the things that holds some women back from leadership roles is the fact that or the idea that this whole work-life balance, they're torn. There's a conflict. And I'm talking about women who are also women leaders who also have kids, maybe young kids. They feel bad when they're at the workplace, leaving the kids behind. And if they decide to become full-time moms, they think that they're missing out, or some try to do it all, and then everything falls apart. So I'm throwing a lot at you, but I'd love some of your top of head thoughts. And I'm not even sure if either of you have children or young children, and so I'd appreciate your perspective.
Well, we're both moms.
Between
us, you've got five kids. Go ahead, Ange.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I've reconciled this a long time ago, because, yeah, as Courtney said, we both are moms. She has three children. I have two. And, of course, there are times when I feel guilt, but I think how I've reconciled being a working parent in a dual working parent household is that, you know, who am I to say that I'm the only one who can love my child? There are a lot of people. They get love. They get tons of it. And also, too, what I've been really focused on is not just the quantity check with time, but when I'm with them, what's the quality related to it? You know, and it's a really great metric that I can put on my presence with my children. So I'm always surrounding them with love. And when I'm with them, I try to be as present as possible, which can be hard to do with the emergence of technology in our life. But I feel like I've struck a pretty nice balance with that. I know, Courtney, you've got some great ideas too.
And I think the key is just to give yourself permission to do a little bit of testing, right? I mean, if we're in marketing or we're doing things in business, a lot of times we do testing to figure out what's best for us. And in my family, we've tried so many different things, whether it's different childcare solutions or different working arrangements. And what we found works best for us is, I guess, the non-traditional traditional, meaning my husband is a stay-at-home parent. And that works really, really well for us. But it was a journey to figure out that was the right fit for our family. So it is just giving yourself permission to identify what you value and to being really creative as you work to meet those values. So, but I will tell you, the Marine Corps training, awesome for parenthood, especially the sleep deprivation part. I feel like I should write a book about everything I learned in the Marine Corps made me a better mom. Because what do you have to harness your emotions for success as a parent?
So for again, some of the women in business that think that they can have it all, what's your view on that? Can you have it all?
I believe you can absolutely have it all, but it's going to be a succession. There are seasons of careers, right? You have seasons where, you know, I'm never perfectly divided between all the responsibilities and passions of my heart. Sometimes I'm over-indexed on time spent in one category of my life, whether that's as a mom or as a business owner, as a consultant. So it's just different seasons, and it's a lot of switching and navigating. But
yeah,
I
don't disagree with what you say. I think that there's just trade-offs to everything. And
right.
So that's it. It's like there's trade-offs. You know, if you want to be a full-time mom, you're going to have a difficult time possibly getting back in the career force. If you're a working mom, you're not going to be around your kids as much perhaps as you like, but it's great to have a plan. So, you know, I guess really it's how do you define all? You know, is it everything you want? Or I think we can all make choices to strike that balance.
Some women that I've had conversations with, they'll say, well, you know, gee, I'm trying to do it all. And so I'm kind of failing in both departments because they're trying to kind of, spread it out all evenly. But to be, and as you both know, you know, the more senior you become in the organization, the greater the demands, the responsibilities, the travel, you know, the higher the pay and the comp, you know, the more that's going to be expected. And so, you know, can you, and that can be very, you know, very stressful for many people. But that's where I was kind of coming from. Where
you know, I found it's a great counter to that is being able to draw our own line at enough, right? Because I think that's the challenge. The more successful we become, the more opportunities we have, and then just humans, we're hardwired to have this infinite desire for more. And I found a lot of peace in kind of saying, well, here's my line in the sand. This is what I want to achieve in this category. And then, you know what? This other category is just as important. And so I work to draw my own lines and my own boundaries. And it's not like I'm limiting myself. It's just I'm trying to kind of balance that insatiable desire to achieve or to do certain things that we're passionate about.
And I think, you know, again, also to be intentional about as if you're moving along in your career, and by the way, families change, the kids get older, there's different needs and issues. And I think just being smart about it, being intentional, being conscious of, you know, some of these changes and taking charge. We've got a break coming up. Now, when we come back from the break, you know, as we all know, we've got an election year next year, and right now, it looks like Hillary's in it, and I bring that up because I'd love to get your thoughts on women in politics, specifically Hillary, and we'll also talk about women in business as well. But when we come back, stay tuned, and we'll be right back right after these messages. Thank you.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
All around the outermost rim of the shield, he set the mighty stream of the river Oceanus, creating Achilles' shield in Homer's The Iliad, Book 18.
Rachel Carson in The Sea Around Us said,
"All at last, return to the sea. To Oceanus, the ocean river, like the ever-flowing stream of time, the beginning and the end."
Moyer's Environmental Dialogues with Dr. Rob Moyer offers lively dialogue and revealing narrative inquiry into how individuals are overcoming obstacles and creating a greener and blue planet Earth.
Tune in Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
What if there was a radio show that could demonstrate how we can cut your taxes in half without diminishing needed government services? One that could explain how to create tens of millions of jobs at no cost to taxpayers, as well as fantastic yet easily affordable health care. Side effects include cutting crime rates nationwide, providing better education for our children, international peace and harmony, and protecting your private personal data from government intrusion. Tune in to Libertarians Working for You with Arvind Vora, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
This is The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. To reach the show today, call in to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to scott@thebusinessofliving.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. We're here with Angie Morgan and Courtney Lynch, co-authors of Leading from the Front, No Excuse Leadership Tactics for Women. So we didn't get through all of the 10 points, but you know, folks, you got to get the book, Leading from the Front, by Angie Morgan and Courtney Lynch to get the rest of them, because right now, in the last segment, I'd love to get your thoughts, Angie and Courtney, on women in leadership that are in the news. And of course, one person that's prominently in the news, and I think right now tooling around somewhere on a bus in the Midwest or something like that, is Hillary.
the Scooby van or something, right? I think it's cool. Van. She's got a cool approach there.
Yeah, but you know, just to be clear, that this is not some old school bus. It's not the Partridge Family school bus. This is a tricked out, you know, van that's got, you know, all the amenities. But anyway, well, your thoughts on Hillary as a leader, her chances, if you had to coach Hillary and give her some guidance, you know, what would that be? So a broad question, but would love to get your thoughts on this.
Courtney, you want to kick off?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I got to say, I'm very excited to see her running. I have 2 8-year-old twin daughters, and one of my daughters came to me the other day and said, "Hey, there's a woman running for president." why is it? It's the first one. Like, she was just very confused that this was exciting news, right? So I've got to hand it to her. I really appreciate it. I mean, Hillary's made an impact on an 8-year-old girl here in Virginia. So I'm thrilled to see her in the race. Again, I truly believe in the strength of diversity. And, you know, we've got a lot of challenges in Washington right now. We got issues around budget and taxation and partisanship. And, you know, I think you add women and you change everything, meaning there's no additional cost to bring diverse minds to the table. And so I love it that she's in the race. I'm excited that she's running. And, boy, it would be an honor to give her perspective and guidance. And I think the perspective and guidance would be just to show up strong every day and to keep doing what she's doing. I mean, she's clearly quite experienced at the level that she's at. And I think that she's an extremely viable candidate. And I would just like to see her stick to the issues and work to pull our entire nation beyond some of the partisan bickering and the low-level ideation that we seem to have in the political spectrum. I'm sad that talent isn't flocking to the political arena like it did in other eras. And I think that's a shame. I think we need more people willing to step up and run.
I love that. And now Hillary, according again to the polls, there's no kind of in between with Hillary. People either really love her or they don't. And obviously, there are things. There have been, you know, several missteps that are going to be kind of, especially as the campaign really heats up. How would you either of you, and maybe Angie, your perspective on this? How would you advise her as to how to handle that? Because as you know, leaders all the time, whether it's the media or the board, you know, they're going to be coming after. Often, you know, they're beset with people coming after them and bringing up again some of the history, et cetera. How would you advise her?
Well, I think. If, again, given an amazing opportunity to advise her, you know, I think she just has to accept that she's polarizing and stick to her strengths and stick to the issues and be very clear on what her stance is. I think one of the things politicians do that is least effective is they go middle on the road on issues, trying to please everybody. But when you stand in the middle of the road, you get hit by both, you know, by both oncoming traffic. Doesn't work that way. So just be very clear. I don't think, you know, the people who hate her, is she really going to change her mind? Their minds? Probably not. And there are just some really strong, and I hate the word hate, but I think I'm very realistic about it. So I think just to be really clear and really transparent. I heard an interview the other day with her and Terry Gross, and I just thought she was exceptional at clarifying her answers and to be very specific on what her point of view was. And I thought, I mean, let's be honest, she's skilled. She's been doing this for quite some time.
So for either of you, if you had to pick her greatest strength and then her greatest weakness, what would that be?
I think her greatest strength is her first, it's her brain power, her intellect, and her tenacity. And her greatest weakness is the fact that she's out of touch in the sense of insulation, you know, having driven a car since 1996. I think that's a challenge, right? I mean, and she's been out of touch for all the right reasons, tremendous amount of public service. But I like the low-key approach on the listening tour and getting back in touch with the average American. So I want that policy wonkish side, but I want it with a dose of real day-to-day life in America.
Now, one of your leadership principles was authenticity. Do you think Hillary's authentic?
It depends. So I guess that means not always.
You know, whenever we give leadership workshops, we ask the question, you know, who are some of the leaders you admire? Just to get the dialogue going. And rarely do people pick political leaders or world leaders or celebrities or people with high profiles, because it's really hard because we don't know them. We don't know them personally. We don't know their character. I think with somebody like Hillary, I mean, she's been vetted. I don't know what else there is to know about her, and I can't imagine what she's possibly hiding, though I know the two things about the two, you know, two devices was kind of what is she hiding. I don't think she's really hiding much. I don't think you can really hide much after an extended career in politics.
Are there other
that's
women?
That's kind of my personal opinion.
I think the more time she is authentic, the better, and she, you know, she should go there. But the political system pushes you away from authenticity.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. Are there other women you'd like to see on either side of the aisle jump into the race? They talk about Elizabeth Warren on the Democratic side, and then you know, we Carly Fiorina, I'm not sure if she's in, out, or still thinking about it. But as examples, are there any women that you'd love to see, you know, kind of jump into the fray?
I'm waiting for a woman from the Bush family, maybe Laura Bush or not.
I mean, honestly, I'm waiting for it. Yeah, I'd like to see more people view political service at that level as a great opportunity. I'd like more women that I've never heard of enter into the race. And that's just not at the national level. I think it's at the local level. It is, Courtney ran for U.S. Senate. We should talk about that. But she got some really wonderful takeaways from that experience. I don't think that the political process encourages the everyday, strong, talented leader, man or woman, to enter it into, because it is, it's a system.
And I think it does come down to pipeline. Like, I definitely had some answers at the tip of the tongue of people that I'd like to see, but I think it's that next level down. I mean, like the Kristen Hildebrands and the people that are still emerging, and then even women that we don't know their names yet today, but I think in another 10 to 15 years, we're going to have a robust pipeline of women running for office at the national and federal levels.
The media was especially brutal with Sarah Palin. What are your thoughts on that? Would you agree with that? And if you were coaching her, you know, what advice would you have given her?
You know, it's interesting. I have Sarah Palin and Hillary Clinton and Laura Bush and George Bush and Bill Clinton's books all next to each other on the shelf. Right? love all of their perspectives. I think, again, I appreciate it. Sarah Palin actually declared her candidacy on my birthday, and so people were emailing me that I'd gotten a great birthday present. I appreciate her stepping up to run. But I think, again, it came down to that credibility factor, right? Was she able to demonstrate the credibility she needed to on the world stage? And I think that she didn't do that effectively. Could she have been credible in many circumstances? I'm sure, absolutely. You don't become the governor of a state without being credible. So I think it was just, again, it goes back to what standards are, and maybe a little bit of that double standard Angie was talking about that we faced in the Marine Corps. When you are a significant minority, you've got to be even that much more credible. I mean, look at Bill Clinton's resume versus Hillary Clinton's resume, right? I mean, Hillary Clinton,
that's right,
far more experience at the point of the presidential election than her husband, and I think that's going to be a factor.
And you definitely have to be, you know, I think Bill Clinton was in many ways similar to Ronald Reagan in the respect that he could connect with people. There was that humanness and that, again, being able to, you know, connect to the everyday person.
Yeah, exactly.
And you got to think Hillary's. No, I think that Sarah Palin's greatest strength is actually Hillary's greatest weakness, and that's that human connection.
Yeah,
Sarah Palin knows the everyday person.
So we just need a Sarah Clinton or something like that. Hey, listen, with just a couple minutes that we have, Now, Courtney, I think you're the one that you have twin daughters?
I do.
And Angie, do you have a daughter?
I've got two boys.
Okay.
Lots of testosterone going around over here.
So we're going to do equal opportunity here. Courtney, I'd love to hear, and again, we got a couple of minutes until we have to close, but, you know, advice that you would give your daughters, you know, throughout life on leadership, if you had to pick a couple of golden nuggets. And then, Angie, I'll ask you the same as you would deliver the same message to your boys.
No, I love it. That's a great question. Thank you for giving me the opportunity, Scott, to reflect on that. It's interesting. This is the advice I'd give them, to have heart and excellence in whatever they choose to do. I always joke with my husband, one thing I wish for my children is a lot less ambition, meaning I don't care if my kids want to, you know, become self-made millionaires or conquer the world. I just want them to be kind, great citizens that have found something that pleases their heart to do, and they strive to do that with excellence. And then whatever their professional pursuits are beyond that, I just want to encourage them to be a good citizen, to stay engaged, whether it's, you know, coaching the local soccer team or running for office or serving on a committee in their municipality. I just want to teach them the value of community. My father was a longtime public servant, always the kind of behind the scenes guy, just high integrity. And everywhere I went in my hometown, people had amazing things to say about him. And I hope that commitment to service really goes along to my daughters as well. So that's the advice I'd give them. And surprisingly gender neutral, right? I want them to be
exactly.
I want them to be leaders. I want
I
them to be
it.
Leaders.
I love it. Thank
and
you.
Men and women, everyone has something to add value with their leadership style and their leadership skills.
Angie.
Well, I think very similar to Courtney's. Really focus on your values in life. I think when you make decisions in line with your values,
you're going to be much more fulfilled in everything that you do. And when your decisions don't reflect your values, bad things happen. So know your values and be true to them. And then the second piece relates to happiness. And I'm sure, Scott, you see this in a lot of your coaching clients. I've met so many unhappy adults. They may be the most successful, the richest, they may have just a lot of materialism and wealth in their lives, but that doesn't make people happy. And unhappy people are unfulfilled people. So know how to make yourself happy, I think, is really, really important.
I completely agree. And I think actually the two are related, at least in my experience. I've found that if you're familiar and aware and committed to your values and you live congruently with those values, I believe that really that's the key, whatever those values might be. But again, that consistency is when people kind of stray from that, where I think the unhappiness comes in. We have been speaking, I wish we had more time, but we've been speaking with Angie Morgan and Courtney Lynch. They are co-authors of Leading from the Front, No Excuse Leadership Tactics for Women, but I'd also advise you guys to pick up a copy. And once again, I want to thank you both very, very much for your service to our country. As you all know, Angie and Courtney both were in the U.S. Marine Corps and are now actively, consulting in the corporate world, bringing that experience into corporate America. Again, thank you so much.
Thank you,
thank
Scott.
You.
It's an honor to be on your show.
And thank you all for joining us. Be sure to tune in next week. You've been listening to The Business of Living. We'll see you next week. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Living. Please join Scott Ventrella for another edition of the show next Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you here next Saturday.